We again this morning want to return to our look at objects which are found in the Bible. We've been doing this now for a number of months. And this morning's object is called the polluted altar. The polluted altar. Sometimes you may see a person who is crying, or a person who appears to be sad, or a person who obviously is depressed, and you ask them what happened. And they may give you the answer, "I have had my feelings hurt." Something can be said to us, or something can be said about us, and we hear it. Something can be done to us, which triggers deep hurt feelings within, which causes grief to come to our mind, which brings sorrow to our heart, and which puts sadness in our life. It's something that we cannot seemingly get off our mind day in and day out. And we explain to other people that this is an experience where we have had our feelings hurt. Some of us probably have more sensitive feelings than others. We're easier to bruise, we're easier to hurt, easier to offend, and we're easier to burden down by what is said. But needless to say, everyone has feelings. It's just a trait of being a human being. All of us are sensitive about something. And any time that you associate with people, either by choice or by necessity, you're going to expose yourself to the possibility of having your feelings hurt. It just cannot be helped. Someone is going to try to embarrass you one day, or poke fun at you, or insult you, or ridicule you. It's going to happen not just once in your lifetime, but probably many, many times during your life it will happen. And the key problem that all of us face when we get our feelings hurt is, what am I going to do with my hurt feelings? What am I going to do about them? How am I going to react to them? How am I going to get over them? How am I going to forget them? And for some people, this is much more difficult than for others. And for some, it seems it just lasts almost a lifetime. Usually our feelings are not hurt by people that we regard strangers, or we regard those who don't like us, who might be called our enemies. Usually our feelings are hurt by people that we regard as either close friends, or at least people who act towards us in a friendly way. And that's one of the grave dangers that you face when you develop a friendship, that you open yourself up to hurt feelings. And usually it's not done deliberately. It's not intentional. Sometimes it's not even known by the person that has done this or said this and has hurt you. They are not even aware that they have hurt your feelings. Today there's much said about better communication between people, especially between husbands and wives and parents and children. We use the word communicate, we normally think of the ability to use words to express how you feel, to express your thoughts clearly, to express well what is on your mind, and we normally use that definition to the word communicate. But the fact is, you don't have to say a word to communicate. You can communicate by your actions, by your silence, even by your facial expressions or tone of voice. But you don't even have to use a word, a tone of voice. You can do it other ways. I'm going to read a story about two couples who went out to eat together at a restaurant. And during the dinner, one husband continually spoke about how energetic and talented and pretty and thoughtful and neat his wife was. And he would give one illustration after another illustration of how much he had thought about his wife. Now, the other husband said nothing at all about his wife. He said nothing good, but he said nothing bad either. He just didn't say anything. He paid her no compliments to the other couple, but also, at the same time, he made no complaints about her to the other couple. He just didn't say anything. Now, the dinner was over, and the couple was on the way home where the husband didn't say anything, and he noticed that his wife was very quiet. She wasn't saying a word. And here's one way that people try to handle hurt feelings. They go into a period or time or days of silence. They just don't say anything. And it's hard if you prod them to get them to say anything. And so he asked her. He thought something was wrong. He said, "Did the meal make you sick? Was something wrong with the dinner?" And she didn't answer him. That's a pretty good indication right there that you got a problem brewing. Something's wrong somewhere, because she just remained in silence. And so he said, "Is something wrong?" And that, when he said that, she said, point blank, "You don't love me. And you just think I'm awful." And he was totally taken back. And he answered her, "What are you talking about? Where did you get such an idea as that? That I don't love you and that I don't think anything good of you?" And she said, "Well, you don't." And he said, "I do." And she said, "You don't." Now, what happened at the dinner table? All right? His silence about his wife sent a message to her, and probably to the other couple too. The message was, "I can't think of anything good to say about my wife as the other man is saying about his wife. I don't find any good traits in my wife to compare to the good traits that I hear being talked about by the other husband. If I compare the two women, my wife and his wife, well then, of course, his wife goes to the head of the class and my wife goes to the foot of the class." Now, he didn't say any of these things to her, but by being silent, that was the message that he was sending to his wife. Now, he apologized and then began to tell her of all her many fine points. Now, that he should have done at the table, you see. But now he is a little late, but I mean, he tries to mend the fence. And he said, I just wasn't thinking. But she was thinking. If he wasn't. I read of a father. Let's just call him Larry. He was a hard-working, dedicated Christian man. Had a lovely wife. Had a large family. But he was what you and I would call a loner in his personality. That would be at the job or even at church and even at home. That is, when the dinner was over at the table, he would get up, withdraw himself from the rest of the family and leave them and go to some other part of the house, and there he would be alone. A close bond developed between the children and the mother, because the mother and the children remained together. There was a bonding. But this did not happen with the father. One day, Larry, unbeknown to his children, overheard them talking about their parents. And they told each other how much their mother loved them. But they all agreed. Now, Larry was out of sight, but he was hearing what was going on. And all the children agreed their father did not love them. They said he was a hard-working man. He was a good father to them. He provided clothes and so forth for them. They had no real wants. He was a stern father. He was a very intelligent man. But he just was not warm or caring or affectionate. And because of that last indication, they said, he does not love us. And he was shocked. But what he heard, he didn't run in there and jump on the kids and argue with them. He just went to his wife and told them what he had heard the children say and asked her. Now, where did they get an idea like that? Now, that's implying maybe or insinuating that she's been undermining him. But anyway, where did they get an idea like that that he did not love them? And so he discussed the matter with his wife and asked her, how could they reach that conclusion? Where did they get that idea? And here is the answer that she gave him. She said, "Honey, the trouble with you is that you love yourself too much." Man, she really laid on and quit. "You love yourself too much. You are taken up with the things that interest you and have little or no interest in things that are important to the children. They regard whatever they say or think or do as being unimportant to you. And all you care about is what you want and whatever it is you care about, and it's not them. You care about everything else but them, because you neglect them and give your attention to whatever else that you think is real important in your life." Now, you see, the silent message that Larry was sending his children, very simple. "I'm not interested in your interest. I'm only interested in my interest. I don't care about being with you. I only care about doing what I want to do. I'm too busy caring about me to have any time to care about you." Now, you say, "Boy, he was really selfish." Yes, that is true. But he was sending or communicating a message to his children. And over the years, the message remained the same, and they finally reached the conclusion, "Our daddy does not love us." Now, he would say that's not true, but he was sending that message. Now, how many silent messages do we send people every day that hurts their feelings? I'm not talking about a verbal abuse. I'm talking about a silent message that we send people that causes their feelings to be hurt. You see, our actions do communicate a message to people. Our silence many times sends a very clear communication to other people. And you may not intend it to do so, but you don't think about what your actions are saying to people. So communicating in this sense can sort of be compared to a person sitting down at one of the old, what I call the telegraph, dot, dot, dash, dash little machines. You know, they had them at the railroad stations. And you just sit down and you just start dot, 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 dot. You don't know what you're doing. But somebody on the other end who can actually read the message just by accident, you send a message that insults them, hurts their feelings. And you say, "Well, I would, you know, I didn't have any intention of hurting anybody's feeling. I was just sitting here pecking on the telegraph machine." Now, pleading ignorance does not remove the hurt feelings from the person that got the silent message. Now, I want to switch our thinking from the silent message that we sometimes send each other to one that we send the Lord. And I have introduced this subject in a roundabout way, but really what I want to preach on this morning is the feelings of the Lord. Somehow we get the idea that God is so uncaring or God is so stern that nothing moves God. Nothing can hurt the feelings of God. Yet the Bible says the Holy Spirit gets grieved. Yet Jesus, who was God the Son, wept. I mean, I would think Jesus asked Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" I think Christ was sensitive to the Pharisees and the Sadducees who hated him and picked up rocks to throw at him. I think he was at times had his feelings hurt. And now, God in heaven can be grieved. That means he's got his feelings hurt. And oftentimes it's done by a message that we send, but it's a silent message. The Lord can be burdened by the messages that we send to him. The Lord can be wearied by the messages that we send to him. Not verbally spoken, not saying, "God, I don't love you," but silent messages. Just like at that dinner table, these are the kind that we're not often aware of that we're sending to God, and God is being affected. Now, if you don't think God's feelings can be hurt, you ought to read the book of Malachi. much of the book is dealt or based on this very theme. Israel, in a sense, was breaking God's heart. And they said, well, what are we doing? We plead innocent. And God says, you are guilty. Not deliberately, but they were sending a silent message that really grieved the Lord. Malachi 1:1. It says, the burden of the word of the Lord as it was spoken by Malachi. The burden of the word of the Lord as it was spoken to Malachi, who in turn was to speak it to the nation of Israel. God said, listen, I want you, Malachi, to tell them what they're doing and the message they're sending to me. And I am so upset and so alarmed, and I want to go and use the word, I am so offended that I want this to stop. And so Malachi begins to hear the Lord reveal to him what the burden was, the silent insult that was coming from them. And so God is instructing Malachi to go to the priest with a message. And primarily it was the priest, or were the priest, who were sending the silent message that offended him. And he tells them, you are the ones that are grieving me. And you are the ones that have insulted me. And so, priest, take notice. Now, when charged with despising God's name, the priests reacted in disbelief, in denial, in shock. They said, God, we are being falsely accused by you. We have not despised your name. No, not with verbal abuse. See? To them, how could God make us a charge? He never heard us say one word like that that would despise his name. Verse 6. God says, the son honors his father, and a servant honors his master. If I be your father, where's my honor? If I be your master, where is my service? Saith the Lord of hosts unto you, O priest that despise my name. And there he says it again. And you say, where, how, when did we despise your name? And God didn't say when you said, but God said when you offered polluted bread upon my altar. And so I said the object this morning is the polluted altar. God said it's not by what you said, it's by what you did that I have been offended. And so what they were doing was offering polluted offerings upon the altar. How did the priest do this? All right, let's go to verse 8, 13, and 14 of chapter 1. And he says, here's what you're doing. You're placing on the altar the blind animals as a sacrifice. You remember God's law was that the animal had to be without spot and wrinkle and blemish. There could be no defects in the animal that God would offer, or man would offer God in the sacrifice. God was saying, I want the best, not the worst. He says, you are offering the blind for sacrifice. That is evil. If you offer the lame and the sick, is that not evil? Why don't you offer such gifts to the governor, to the king? Will he be pleased to receive those gifts and accept that person? Asked the Lord. And you said, behold, about the sacrifices. Now here's where they open their mouth. And they put their foot in it. You have said, behold, it is a weary thing to offer these sacrifices. And you have snuffed at it, said the Lord of hosts. And then he goes back to the same argument. That is, they had offended him by their actions. He says, you have brought that which was torn, and that which was lame, and that which was sick. Thus you brought such an offering to my table. Do you think I should accept from you that kind of offerings? And the answer is, of course not. But cursed be the deceiver, which hath in his flock a male, and vows and sacrifice to the Lord a corrupt thing. For I'm a great king, and I'm a great Lord. I'm the Lord of hosts, and my name is dreadful among the heathen. In other words, God was saying, I deserve something better than what you priests are offering on the altar. Now, what was the message? That their actions were sending to the Lord. It was not spoken verbally, but it was a silent action that caused God, as he said in verse 1, to become very burdened with the priest, and eventually, of course, the people. Now, here was the silent message that they were sending, and I want you to try to identify this now with your own life. Because oftentimes we Christians wonder why our prayers aren't being answered. And I'll tell you, one key reason might be that you are offending and hurting the feelings of God by actions that you are doing. I'm not saying you're doing deliberate sin. You're not involved in adultery or cursing. You're not stealing. But there are other things that you are doing, and your actions imply to God things that cause Him a burden. And He won't answer your prayer because you are such a burden to Him. He won't bless when you're a burden. Put it that way. Now, what was the message that they were sending? Number one, God, in our eyes as the priest, you are only worth or worthy of what we don't want. You know how many people base their offering in the plate and to God on that very same principle? God, we only are going to give to you what we don't want for ourselves. We don't want the blind and the lame and the sick. We got to get rid of them anyway. They are rejects. So we'll just give you what we don't want. How much time do you give God? For a lot of Christians, the only time I'm going to give God is the time I don't want to give to myself. That was the problem with the man and his children. He had no time. He wanted to give his children because he wanted to give it all to himself. God says, give me the best of your time. And the priest said, you're not worth. You're not worth the best of our time. You're only worth what we don't want and can't find any time for ourselves to use for ourselves. In other words, God, you deserve the scraps. How many Christians come to God in prayer and their life actions say, God, all you really get and deserve are scraps. And now, God, bless me with your best. Give me the finest blessings off the top shelves of your heavenly storehouse. But it's for you, God. You know, all you really are worth to me are my rejects and my scraps. What few scraps of money I have in my pocket. Few scraps of time. Few scraps of service. Few scraps of worship. You know, God, give me your best. What's the song we sing? Give of your best to the master. And we say, oh, no. My best is too involved in myself. I don't have anything to give to God. How does God take this, people? Do you understand the message that you're sending? That our interest deserves prime consideration, and His interest deserves little to no consideration? We'll give Him the lame and the blind and the sick. We'll give Him really what we don't want. What is the message a husband gives if he comes home and has two packages in his hand, and his wife says, what's that? And he says, well, I bought you a dress. And let's say he got it from a garage sale for 25 cents. And he said, what's in the other packages? Oh, I went down to the men's store and I bought me this $500 suit. Now, what's the message, people? I'm worth 500, you're worth a quarter. Now, he may not say that to her verbally, but that's the message that he is sending to her silently. And she will have her feelings hurt, and rightly so. Rightly so. If he'd have reversed that and said, I bought this suit for 25 cents and I bought you this $500 dress, she'd have felt like the queen. And she would have thought, boy, you must really love me. I mean, you gave me the best and you took the least. Ah, now that's the way it ought to be. You see, that's what God said. Hey, I am God. I am king. I deserve the best, not the worst. And so, in a sense, the gift was denoting the appraisal value the priest put upon God. What's the message you send God when you don't pray? Very quickly, I don't need you. I don't thank you. What's the message when you refuse to listen to God speak? Nothing you have to say is worth listening to, God. When you refuse to worship, I don't care about your company, God. When you refuse to repent, God, you're mistaken. I don't find agreement with you. I think you're wrong. What's on God's mind? So, I don't know. Maybe you ought to think about it. Maybe some of the things on God's mind are things that you have, by your actions, said to Him and brought Him offense. Think about this during the week. Until next Sunday, may God bless.